This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Judge Jeanine Pirro.
She's the outspoken host.
Judge Jeanine Pirro is dominating the headlines right now.
This is the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Sunday Morning Show. Now, here's Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Welcome, everyone, to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. I hope everyone is enjoying their day so far. It is a wonderful day here in New York City, and as always, we are armed and ready to serve justice with all my great listeners on the Red Apple Audio Network. Oh, what a week, what a week, what a week. But then again, when Donald Trump is the candidate, it's always a fascinating week. A massive discovery violation by Alvin Bragg in the Manhattan prosecution. Remember, that's the bookkeeping case where the statute of limitations is already passed for the misdemeanor that is the basis of the charge. And because it already passed, what Alvin Bragg did was he took a felony from the federal statutes, bootstrapped it to give new life to the Manhattan case and to make it a felony so he could indict Donald Trump. And unfortunately, this week, even Alvin Bragg said, even though we're 2 weeks before trial, it was supposed to start on March 25th, I think the defendant, Donald Trump, should be given 30 days to look at tens of thousands of pieces of evidence that he hasn't seen yet. Well, isn't that sweet? Here's the bottom line, folks. You're supposed to give discovery to the defendant, in this case, the president, within 15 days of arraignment. And now he says 2 weeks, 14 days before the trial, I think we should get a 30-day delay. And, of course, President Trump and his team come back and say, give us 90, if not total dismissal. This is a massive discovery violation, folks. That case should be dismissed. And, you know, the amazing part of it is the records that are the subject of this, quote, newly not discovered, because we always knew it was there, but this newly received evidence is from the Southern District of New York. Everybody knew the Southern District of New York investigated Donald Trump for this Stormy Daniels case and that they had records. And so not providing those records, which is the essence of the case in Manhattan, is a discovery error that requires dismissal. And so you've got the feds who looked at it. They said no. Then Cy Vance, the DA in Manhattan, he said this isn't worth prosecuting. No. He said no. And then you got one teed off guy. Maybe it's Pomerantz. I'm not sure which of the haters it is. But he went and wrote a book. And then they said, oh, we better indict Trump. So now they are left with a very damaging situation here where they violated the rules. And if that ain't enough for you, the Judge McAfee, you know, the guy who didn't have the chutzpah to defend and protect his own courtroom from Fannie Willis coming in and running the joint, split the baby in the middle and said, Fannie, you can stay on the case even though there is the appearance of impropriety. And you can keep your office on the case as long as you let Wade go. Well, as far as I'm concerned, folks, that's a benefit to Fannie because Wade has never tried a felony case, certainly cannot try a felony RICO complicated case. We saw him as a witness. You did too. This guy was sweating bullets in a courtroom. He doesn't know how to handle himself. He doesn't know his way around a courtroom. So the judge did a favor for Fannie Willis. Now, you can say to me, well, no, you know, he did what he had to. It'll go up on appeal, folks. I know it will. But the judge bought the nonsense about, even though she paid him almost $700,000 and she went on vacations, I think there were six of them in 5 months, cruises, Norwegian cruises, they went to Belize, they went here and there and everywhere. She paid him in cash, and even though there's no proof of it, you know, I believe her. I mean, give me a break, Judge. The truth is, folks, Judge McAfee, he's running in Georgia in 2 weeks. He can't tee off Fannie Willis and the people who support her. So he did the wimp thing, and he allowed her to continue with the case. I think the case has a huge, huge shadow on it. And I think that even if she does go forward, and you and I both know she's going to dump Wade in a second, there still is not enough there, and she is very tainted by the case. So today I'm going to be speaking with Michael Davis from the Article 3 Project, a brilliant lawyer, Hogan Gidley, a brilliant press secretary, and Laura Trump. What's she doing on the RNC? It's all coming up in just a few moments here on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show. And never forget, that's the commitment we made on 9/11. Honor it by donating $11 a month to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation at t2t.org. That's t2t.org. And up next here on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show, I will be speaking with Michael Davis of the Article 3 Project, coming up right here on the Georgia decision and Judge McAfee. It's all here on the Red Apple Audio Network.
This is the Judge Jeanine Show. This is the Jeanine Pirro Show. Now, here's Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Welcome back to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Joining me now is a person that you've heard from before. You've seen her on Fox News. You've seen her all over the news. She is presently the co-chair of the Republican National Committee. She is the daughter-in-law of former President Trump, but more importantly, she is a brilliant woman in her own right. Our friend Laura Trump. Laura, good morning, and thanks for being with us on this Sunday morning. How are you?
Well, good morning. Thank you. I'm great. I'm excited to be in this new position, as you just mentioned, as co-chair of the RNC. I think we are all day by day realizing how important, if you didn't already know, this upcoming election is. So this role hopefully will help get us over the finish line. I can tell you already in the first week, Judge, we have done some really amazing things and made some big changes over at the RNC. So we're ready to work.
Well, you know, Laura, when you talk about big changes at the RNC, we know about the Republican Party and we know general stuff, but I don't think that most Republicans know what a mess the RNC was. And I'll say it, you don't have to. And, you know, your being second at the helm along with Michael Whatley is certainly going to straighten things out. Would I be correct in saying that?
Well, you said it. Yeah, you.
Okay,
you are correct.
All right, Laura. Let me say this.
Go ahead.
There has to be accountability. The RNC is an incredible operation that is there for Republican candidates from the top down. And, you know, under the former leadership, there were a lot of people who were wondering what was going on. So I can tell you that I and a lot of people who are in the know are very grateful that someone who's got, you know, a strong leadership ability and accountability, who understands accountability and consequences is in charge. So I'll applaud you. You don't even have to say anything, Laura Trump. But what are you doing differently? Let's start there.
Well, thank you. Well, first of all, look, I get it. I understand. And I think a lot of people felt the way that you just described, which is they really didn't know what was going on over at the RNC. And unfortunately, this is an organization that you need in order to win the presidency. You need this across the country for the down ballot races. And people were not donating and not supporting the RNC in the way that is necessary in order for us to be successful. And so there was a change in leadership. Friday, a week ago, Michael Whatley and I were both elected by the 168 RNC committee members as chair and co-chair. And you know, first and foremost, I think you saw last week, we did some, I'll say, restructuring, to put it nicely, of some of the personnel there. There were people who were let go. There are a lot of people we've brought in. And I think what you're going to see from this new RNC is that we're tackling areas that Republicans have never traditionally even looked at. Things like early voting, we're going to have to push people to do, because we want to make sure that we swamp the system with votes so that they can't cheat. We are doing things like illegal ballot harvesting, which we have never, ever tried to do. But you understand, right, if you look over at the other side, they've been doing this stuff for decades. And if we cannot play the game better than they do, we will lose in perpetuity. Doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results is the definition of insanity. So we have to step up and play the game differently. And I hear it from people all the time. We want one day of voting. We want paper ballots. We want voter ID. And I get that. And we can get to that point. It is not where we are right now. How do we get there? Number one, you have to make sure that at the top, we elect Donald Trump as the 47th president. We have to expand our lead in the House. We have to take back the Senate. And then you go in and you can make changes like that, that will indeed make our elections more secure and ensure that only legal citizens are voting. But right now, the hand we are dealt is not one day of voting. It is not paper ballots. And we know how the voter ID situation is across this country right now, thanks to the Democrats. So we have to attack this very differently this time around. I can assure you, you are going to see massive change in the way that we message things and in our actions, especially when it comes to election integrity, things like early voting and mail-in voting as well. So already, I can tell you, it'll be a much different election year than you've ever seen, a la the RNC.
Well, you know, one of the things that you mentioned, Laura Trump, is the idea of ballots and mail-in ballots. And it's something that the Democrats are expert at, so to speak, and something that the Republicans certainly, you know, have not focused on, taken advantage of. And I think that we now know that it's extremely important. And how are you going to do that? How are you going to get people who are used to voting on Election Day to say, hey, I'm going to send in a mail-in ballot? How do you get them to trust that?
Well, here's what we say. The messaging is very simple. We want you to vote however you can. And if you are a person who is unsure that you can actually physically make it to a polling location, mail in a ballot. That we are also going to have, Janine, in every possible polling location. Obviously, we always have poll watchers, but we're going to have trained poll workers. These are people who actually can physically handle these ballots, who can count the ballots coming in and the ballots going out. So we know how many should exist in a specific polling location. We also are going to have paid and volunteer attorneys in the polling locations as well, but it's as well in the tabulation centers. Those are locations where the mail-in ballots are actually received. It's about chain of custody, and it's about protecting the vote once that vote is in. So we just have to message it differently. We have had this idea that we should send people to vote on Election Day, but you look around the country at different races. Look just at the state of Arizona, for example, in the midterms in 22, how many people didn't get to go vote? They all went to vote on Election Day. There were issues with the voting machines at specific locations. Isn't it interesting? They were in very heavily Republican areas, but I digress. We can't leave it to chance. So what we want to tell people is whenever you can vote, however you can vote, go vote, and then take your time from that day on to Election Day in the early voting days to get people every single day to go vote. Like I said, we want to have so many votes as we go into November 5th that it doesn't matter how many 3 a.m. dumps they have. It doesn't matter how many suitcases full of ballots they might have. There will be a clear victory for Donald Trump.
Well, I think that we've learned from the last election that there has to be a change in the way some things are done. And I think that if there's anyone who can do it, I think that you're the person who can do it. You know, some people see you, Laura, as, you know, well, she's the daughter-in-law of the president. I mean, they don't know that you are a force in your own right. You know, that you graduated from North Carolina State with honors. And, you know, what I love about you that most people don't know, is that you also graduated from the French Culinary Institute. You play the piano like a genius. I mean, you jump horses. You are a very talented, focused, disciplined individual. And I, for one, see a tremendous advantage to you being there. Now, Michael Whatley, who's running the RNC, he is from North Carolina also. What is his background?
Yes, he's an incredible guy. He is the perfect fit for chairman of the RNC. And I think why he's going to be so effective and why people should be so excited specifically right now about Michael is that he was the GOP chair in the state of North Carolina. That's where he was before mm-hmm. coming to the RNC. And if you look back at 2020 and you look at all of the states, North Carolina is just about the only state where we didn't have massive questions about voter fraud. And that is because of Michael Whatley and what he put in place. He made sure that across the entire state, there are 99 counties in the state of North Carolina, every single county had multiple attorneys at the ready, as I just mentioned, like we want to do nationwide now.
Yes.
So that any time there was even a question of anything, they could attack it in the moment. He did such a great job with voter integrity. I'm with election integrity and ensuring that people felt like their vote was counted and that there was no funny business. That is why I think he's very, very powerful for this time, because we know that they don't play the game the same way we do on the other side of the aisle. And we have to smarten up and we have to change the way we attack things. And Michael is certainly going to do that. If you hear my father-in-law talk about him ever at a rally, at a certain event, he always touts the way he operated things in the state of North Carolina for the Republicans in the 2020 election. And man, that was a crazy one. So for somebody to be able to say there was really no massive voter fraud, that is a huge accolade.
Well, and also mentioning North Carolina, Laura Trump, you know, you guys in this recent primary election with Nikki Haley, I mean, that was her state. She was the governor. Speaking of North Carolina, the Carolinas, we just saw a recent primary election, South Carolina, where the president, the former president, absolutely trounced Nikki Haley, which I think speaks to the Republican operation in both North and South Carolina. It is strong in the Carolinas.
It's strong in the Carolinas. And, you know, every election, I can't believe this is the third one, Judge, that we're going on. You know, my father-in-law tasked me single-handedly with winning him my home state of North Carolina.
Yeah, I know he did.
I have to deliver it yet again this election cycle. But what was interesting about South Carolina to me is I actually went there. I campaigned for him in the days leading up to that primary. And no. And it's incredible because you do see that is Nikki Haley's home state. That was if there was ever a state that she was going to be successful in, it was going to be South Carolina. And yet the momentum for Donald Trump was so amazing.
All right, Laura Trump, I want to thank you for joining us. I know your time is limited, but I know that you are a force who is going to bring the Republican National Committee along with the chair there to its feet in this election and make a big difference. And our hats off to you, as it always is, Laura Trump. Thanks so much for joining us on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show.
Thank you so much, Judge. Great to be with you.
Take care. All right. And up next, we will be speaking with Hogan Gidley.
Judge Jeanine Show. Exploring the truth with both sides of the story. Red Apple Audio Networks. Stories that shape our world.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
This is the Jeanine Pirro Show. Now, here's Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Welcome back to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Joining us is former White House Deputy Press Secretary. Please join me in welcoming to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show, Hogan Gidley, who you've heard before, you've seen him before. He is an all-time phenomenal political aide who served as White House Deputy Press Secretary for the Donald Trump during the Trump administration. He's also got a lot of accolades as it relates to running media operations for Mike Huckabee when he was governor and South Carolina Republican Party, et cetera, et cetera. But let's just cut right to the quick here. How are you today, Hogan?
I'm doing really well. And let's be fair, there ain't much comms to do when you got Mike Huckabee, a master communicator, doing his thing, and Donald Trump, who takes it right to the media every single day. I'm just kind of along for the ride at that point. You
know I doubt it, but that was very, very nice, Hogan. The truth is there's a lot of work there. It was an interesting week this past week, with all the stuff that came down in Georgia. But I focus on a couple of really significant things that happened this week. One is the Hur report, where the special counsel testified before Congress. And I got to tell you, I used to listen in and be so impressed. But now all it is a 3-minute political speech by everybody that rarely do you get to the truth. But one of the issues as it relates to Hur and, his statement that Joe Biden is an aging old man with a bad memory, is that he made it very clear that he did not exonerate Joe Biden and he did not reach a conclusion he was innocent. And I was kind of stunned that he was that clear about it. Were you surprised?
A little bit. I was kind of shocked by that part of it, but there was a kind of a bombshell, I think, tucked into that. Now, I'll be honest, I don't like the word bombshell because it was the most overused word by the media during the Donald Trump administration. Every day was a bombshell that turned out to be nothing. But in this particular instance, they got to the bottom of the fact that the White House tried to edit this report so that this information about Joe Biden wouldn't get out. But we were told that the DOJ was walled off. He's not a political actor. Why in the world would they try to soften this report? But you hit on something I think that really is kind of encapsulates the whole problem. What we know here is that Joe Biden did it. We also know he lied about it. The question is, who's ever going to be holding these people to account? I mean, we have documents cases with Hillary Clinton, with Joe Biden, with Mike Pence, with Donald Trump, but only one of them is being attacked and prosecuted. That's Donald Trump. So the jarring juxtaposition of having all similar cases, and the only difference is Donald Trump was president of the United States, had the ability and the authority to have these documents, yet he's the only one being prosecuted, just reeks of a two-tier justice system. And I always say it's not just who they decide to prosecute, it's who they decide to protect. And they are keeping Joe Biden and Hunter Biden walled off because they want to give them a second chance at this apple to be president of the United States again. It really is disgusting to watch. But look, I was really fascinated, though, because of the interesting situation that the Democrats are in here, because basically Hur said he did these crimes, but I'm not going to move forward with prosecution because he's a doddering old man. He's senile and he can't get his stuff together. And he'd be sympathetic to a jury. But the left and all the Democrats said after State of the Union and during that hearing, no. He's so sharp as a tack. Look at him. He's forceful. He's with it. He's here every day doing the job. Okay. The only defense of not prosecuting him was he's sympathetic and senile. If you're telling me he's not senile, then when's the trial start? I'm ready for the prosecution to begin. But it's never going to happen, as you know.
Well, I mean, that was an excellent analysis of it. You know, that whole commentary by Special Counsel Hur that he was an old man, sympathetic old man with a bad memory. You know, the Democrats all said, oh, that's a cheap shot. That was unnecessary. That was political. And to some people, they say, well, that's the reason Hur didn't charge. You know, to me, it was irrelevant There is no defense of an aging old man who's sympathetic with a bad memory in the penal law anywhere in the United States. Should that issue even come up, it's up to a judge and a psychiatrist to figure it out. So Hur tells us he didn't exonerate him. He didn't reach a conclusion he was innocent. We did identify that some of the evidence was willfully held and withheld, and yet Joe Biden didn't have the right to have any of that stuff because he wasn't the president at the time. And Joe Biden moved this stuff from residence to residence, from office to office, one of them paid for by China. And then he blames his staff. Remember that, Hogan? He threw them under the bus. And you and I both know the staff can't go into the skiff. Joe Biden took it out of the skiff. So there is no fact pattern that allowed Joe Biden to take and steal and keep those documents in a tattered up, unsecure, uncovered box next to a broken lamp that he saw every day when he drove his vet in and out. But you know what? We're going after Donald Trump. He may have had it locked up and he may have the right to declassify. But under the Presidential Records Act, Donald Trump has the right to access that information anytime he wants. So here we are in a mess, Hogan. We are in a mess, and it is a two-tiered system of justice. And in the end, Joe Biden gives his State of the Union where he's hopped up, jacked up. What do you think happened there?
Well, it's obvious they gave him something to get him up and excited. But the problem is, I mean, that's obvious. I mean, you see him every single day. He doesn't talk like that. He doesn't get angry. He's not fired up like that. He's usually whispering into the microphone. Now he's yelling at people. It was divisive. It was rancorous. It was really egregious. Didn't even talk about America. I mean, started with Ukraine, for heaven's sake.
Yeah.
And the interesting part is he's talking about defending their borders. We need to give them money to defend their borders. Didn't bring up at all that we were going to defend our borders until 41 minutes into the speech.
Right.
And of course, when pressed on actually saying the name of that sweet young girl who was killed by an illegal alien, he got the name wrong, called her Lincoln Riley, and then didn't admit to the fact it was his policies that left the door wide open for this guy to come into the country. And then it was his radical leftist DAs who let this guy out of prison because they refused to prosecute those who commit crimes twice. I mean, this guy slipped through the net many times, and it was all his fault.
All right. We love you, Hogan Gidley. Take care.
Thanks, Judge.
All right.
Thanks, Judge.
And never forget, that's a commitment we made on 9/11. Honor it by donating $11 a month to the Tunnel to Towers Foundation at T2T.org. That's T, the number 2T.org.
This is the Judge Jeanine Show. This is the Jeanine Pirro Show. Now, here's Judge Jeanine Pirro.
Okay, welcome back to the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Joining me is a friend of the station. His name is Michael Davis. You've heard him many times. You've seen him on Fox. He is the head of the Article 3 Project. And we are going to talk about the decision by Judge McAfee in Georgia, who made a decision that Georgia DA Fannie Willis can remain on the Trump election fraud case if Special Prosecutor Nathan Wade steps aside. Now, quote, the district attorney may choose to step aside along with the whole of her office. Alternatively, Wade can withdraw, the judge ruled. Now, what's your first impression of this, Michael Davis?
Well, I would say that I think the judge misapplied the law, and he caved to the political pressure, because there's no question that Fannie Willis had an illegal financial stake in this criminal prosecution against President Trump and 18 others. She illegally paid her secret boyfriend, unqualified boyfriend, $250 an hour to bring these unprecedented RICO charges against political opponents, including Trump and 18 others. He's paid him $700,000 in counting. He's taken her on these lavish trips to Napa, the Caribbean, to Belize, who the hell knows where else. She lied about this. She got other people to lie about this, including her, including 10 attorneys in her office, submitting a knowingly false affidavit from Nathan Wade's divorce proceedings in front of this Judge McAfee's court.
Right.
She got caught lying, and now this judge, I think, is caving to the political pressure because he now faces a Democrat opponent in Fulton County, Georgia.
Exactly. That's where I was going, Michael Davis. You know, the judge in this case, McAfee, seems to split the baby here. He says she can stay on the case with her office or get rid of Wade. So, Michael Davis, if the judge ruled there was a significant appearance of impropriety, why take him off and not her?
Well, I think you saw at that evidentiary hearing, you know, he used to work for Fannie Willis. He donated $150 to her campaign. I think he's scared of her. I think he wouldn't even look at her during that evidentiary hearing when she was running his courtroom. I can't imagine a scenario where anyone would ever do that in your courtroom, Judge. But that's what happened with Judge McAfee's courtroom. He let Fannie Willis drag him around his own courtroom.
Well, yeah, she is. I think I've said it many times, Michael, that she would have been held in contempt of court and they would have taken her out in the wagon to the county jail. But that's another issue. But, you know, the relationship, and I don't know that people understand it. Some people say, you know, okay, so she had an affair. But the problem is that it was an affair where she lied about it. She gave her boyfriend close to $700,000. She went on vacations with him, and the judge admitted that you know, she did say she paid him in cash, but it really isn't that much money. And maybe some people actually, you know, pay back people in cash with no records. So we kind of let her off. But it seems to me, Michael, if there is this appearance of impropriety, it's on her part. She's the one who brought him in. She's the one who shared in the vacations. Why does he get dumped and not her? And I think that a lot of this is going to go up on appeal. And it makes no sense because he noted the appearance of impropriety remains, basically making his decision a split ruling with some of the motions put forward by Trump, which was granted in part and denied in part.
Well, look, when he dismissed six of these counts several days ago, I knew this was coming. Frankly, I knew this was coming at the hearing when he wouldn't look at her. I knew that he would be too scared as this young judge with a young family who's facing an election here in November in an overwhelmingly Democrat county called Fulton County, Atlanta, Georgia. I knew he was going to do this. Now, maybe, just maybe, he has laid enough of the factual predicate where the appellate court can come in and say, look, you misapplied the law here, Judge McAfee. If you found these facts, you have to, as a matter of law, you have to recuse Fulton County DA Fannie Willis and her entire office. You have to disqualify them.
Well, you know, Donald Trump's lawyer responded by saying, while they respect the court's decision, we believe the court did not afford appropriate significance to the prosecutorial misconduct of Willis and Wade, including the financial benefits and testifying untruthfully about when their relationship began. And of course, they're going to take it up on appeal. So the decision right now, Michael, is she has to decide whether to throw him off the under the bus and keep going or recuse herself. I mean, to me, that's an easy one. What do you think?
Well, I mean, I think Judge McAfee has turned this into a Jerry Springer episode, right? I mean, why the hell is he playing relationship counselor here? His job is to say, yes, Fannie Willis has an illegal financial stake in this criminal prosecution, which is absolutely illegal and unethical. She lied about this. She got other people to lie about this. They submitted, Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade submitted a knowingly false affidavit from Nathan Wade's divorce court to Judge McAfee. They got 10 attorneys in the Fulton County DA's office to sign on to that. Two of those 10 knew this was a lie. I seriously doubt the other 8 knew it was a lie when they submitted it. And so you have Fannie Willis and her boyfriend, Nathan Wade, getting eight other attorneys in that office submitting false affidavits to Judge McAfee. And Judge McAfee wants to split the baby here.
But what are the false affidavits? What are you saying the false affidavits are?
There was an affidavit that that Nathan Wade submitted in his divorce proceedings about denying that there was a romantic relationship between Fannie Willis.
Right.
Yes. And then Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade knew that was a lie, and they submitted that in response to co-defendant Mike Roman's motion to dismiss in front of Judge McAfee.
So right.
There were numerous instances where Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade committed perjury, subornation of perjury, submitted false statements, obstruction of justice. We have bribery. We have, you know, we have gift ban violations. And to say we're just going to split the baby here and one of you has to go, but this case can go forward. This case was illegally tainted from before its inception because the evidence is clear that even Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade admit that their inappropriate relationship started before they brought the criminal indictments, right? That's undisputed. Before they brought this unprecedented RICO indictment against Trump and 18 others, everyone admits that they have this inappropriate relationship. She illegally hired her secret, dumb, unqualified boyfriend to bring this RICO charge against Trump and 18 others. And they have a financial stake in this prosecution. And she benefited pretty nicely from this criminal prosecution.
Oh, okay, but so what you're saying is that the affidavits that were submitted, that we didn't have an affair, they were submitted in the divorce case?
They were said, no, the affidavit was in the divorce case, Nathan Wade's divorce case. And then they took that affidavit from that divorce case and they had 10 attorneys from the Fulton County DA's office, Fannie Willis and Nathan Wade, to admit that affidavit in response to co-defendant Mike Roman's motion to dismiss.
Okay, so they submitted the affidavit from the civil divorce case in the criminal case, another co-defendant. That is subornation of perjury because they then both admitted that they had an affair. We have the Article 3 Project and we have you, Michael Davis, and I thank you so much for joining us. And we'll see whether or not they appeal this and whether the appellate courts take it and what their decision will be. So thanks for joining us, Michael Davis. I know your time is precious.
Thank you, Judge.
All right. And never forget, that's the promise we made. Join the Tunnel to Towers Foundation on its mission to do good in honor of America's heroes. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's T, the number two. T.org. And up next here on the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation show, I will be gaveling out with my closing argument. It's all coming up here on the Red Apple Audio Network. Okay, now it's time for me to gavel out with my closing argument. Well, you know, it's been an interesting show. We spent a lot of time on the law, and it makes sense that we did so given the unusual situation we have here. The first time in history that a former president of the United States has been indicted four times with something like 91 counts. And there's been tremendous pushback by the president and obviously a pushback by Republicans in terms of their support for him in spite of these indictments and allegations. The Republicans have essentially chosen the Republican nominee for the 2024 election, and it is Donald Trump in spite of everything that's happened. But what we've seen here and what you heard from the guests today, Hogan Gidley, Laura Trump, and Michael Davis, is the unusual nature of the charges that are being brought against the former president, the weakness of a lot of them, especially the New York case, and now this Atlanta, Georgia case where they pretty much split the baby down the middle. Honestly, I think telling Fannie Willis, you got to get rid of your boyfriend, but you can go forward, is no punishment at all for not only the appearance of impropriety, which the judge admits they've already shown, but it pretty much denies some of the ethical issues that the judge apparently, tackled himself, but didn't come down on the right side. So we will see over the next few months what happens with these cases, whether the New York case of Alvin Bragg, where the president now has to look at 73,000 pieces of evidence that he should have seen 15 days after the arraignment, and what the appellate courts in Georgia tell us. It's all very interesting, but then so is political life when Donald Trump is the president or the candidate for president of the United States. I can't believe we're out of time already. Make sure you join us right back here next week, same time, same place, for the Judge Jeanine Tunnel to Towers Foundation Show. Have a great day, everybody. Bye.
This is the Judge Jeanine Show.